today's conference call is on how LIBOR are you? So hopefully you have paper and pen and can jot down some of these questions, and perhaps during the call you can have time to jot down the answer that comes to you if there's an area that you feel like you need to focus on or something that comes to your mind that's important. Just take note of it. We'll be going through several things, so some of them we'll stop and elaborate on. Others we'll go through rather quickly.
I'm going to be asking you several questions, so make sure that you have a pencil. And when you jot down the question, we're going to give you some levels to kind of analyze where you're at on those.
That's right.
Questions.
So how LIBOR are you? Our first question is, to what level have you invested in your education? I'll repeat that. To what level have you invested in your education?
Tiffany, can I just really quickly, for some people, they may not know the word LIBOR very well.
Yes,
so
give us the history of LIBOR.
I'd like to go over that a little. The word LIBOR is a root word for liberty and library and libro. You can already see that if liberty and library are connected, then somehow in the history of the etymology of the word, that there was a belief that liberty and education went together. LIBOR, of course, many of you probably know the definition of LIBOR. It's Latin, and it's the definition is... LIBOR is Latin for tree bark. And people who, the Romans used tree bark to make their paper. And the people who could engage in contract or could have relationships of contract were considered to be LIBOR.
And contract usually infers that you had private property and were protecting it.
And it also infers that if you had private property, you were educated enough to own private property.
And know the laws.
Yeah. So LIBOR and so liberty and education are, in the Latin mind, are inseparably connected. So under the word LIBOR, we're going to ask you several freedom questions which have to do with your education and
your liberty.
Your liberty.
Right. Thank you. And the first one is, to what level have you invested in your education? Here are the seven levels. The bottom one is ground level. We call this the couch potato. This is the type of person who hates learning. They don't do it. The person's pride prevents them from seeing truth in anything except for what they think is true. And I'm going to use you now instead. So if you're at ground level, you're a couch potato, you hate learning, you don't do it, your pride prevents you from seeing the truth in anything except for what you believe is true, and you make the same mistakes over and over, wondering why the results never change. That is ground level. That's, you know, you're just standing there. Okay, of course, obviously, none of you are at that level. There's no way that you would even be seeking to educate, you know, your children. But you can. Sometimes I like to take an analysis of me and my friends and my associates, because I know that the people that I hang with, I'm going to be like. So not in a judgmental way, but in an analytical way for myself to have a better myself. Sometimes I'll take the top 3 to 6 people in my life and see where they fit in these as well. But today, really focus on yourself where you're at. Number two level.
Can I add to that ground level?
Yes.
My daughter has started a newsletter in our neighborhood, so we deliver newsletters to 1,200 households in my neighborhood. And it's very interesting because I, you know, have to go up to the door and put the newsletter on their door and walk away. I have been having a very interesting experience doing that, because I walked up to a house and the the lawn wasn't mowed and there was kind of some garbage strewn, and I went to put on the newsletter, and it was like 7 o'clock at night, and I heard the TV blaring in the background in the home, and I saw three men sitting on the table, I mean sitting on the sofa, watching the TV and, you know, eating their dinner. And I thought that was really interesting. Then a couple of days later, I was delivering the newsletter again, and I was up in a different area, and I came up to this house that the lawn was immaculate and looked really great, and there was no garbage out there, and a beautiful flower garden. And I walked up to the door, and the window of the door was, I mean, the window of the house, the drapes had been pulled back, and the study, I guess, is right off of the front door. And, I mean, I didn't peek into the window. You can just see the window. And there was this man sitting in his chair reading a book. And I thought, wow, that is so interesting, the difference between sitting and watching a TV, the couch potato, and another of a man sitting reading a book, and the kind of homes that they lived in, the reflection of their lives.
Wow, that is interesting.
I mean, and they were just about
the 1,200 homes, you know.
Yeah.
Keep on looking for patterns, see if it's consistent. That is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, one home wasn't more expensive than the other. They were very comparable homes, you know, medium-sized homes. They weren't like huge homes on the hill or whatever. But I just
right.
thought was really interesting that, you know, the whole couch potato attitude really reflects that your education really reflects in all aspects of your life.
Okay, number two, money tree. This sometimes looks like the worker. A person who is in level two learns for money. The education itself has no meaning. It is a way to get money. It's that you buy into the philosophy that education is about getting a good job or good grades. As long as it seems that education will better the person's station in life, the person will do the requirements. This is the level that when I was in public school, this was the initiated level that we were supposed to buy into. This was the top level of education. For the words, it wasn't for all the teachers.
And
or
you're saying it's the second level of education.
So this is the second level. This is just like the...
And there are seven levels.
Just one,
but this
yeah.
is the top level.
Yeah, it was... most of the time, unless I had an exceptional mentor, this was the language. You're here because you need good grades. You're here because you need a good job. That's why you're here. Very rarely was there a teacher who said, education is here to make you happy. You know,
right.
getting educated is going to make you find joy in life. Getting education is going to give you experiences that nothing else can. I mean, it wasn't that kind of language. It was the language of, you need to get good grades, and you need to get a good job, and
or
you'll know,
fail in the workplace.
Right, and that's level two. And there's a large amount of people who buy into that level for education.
I think it's really interesting, Tiffany, because my husband has had opportunity to get to know Dave Ramsey a little bit, working for his company. And one of the things that he says, I mean, he's all about money, right?
Right, Financial Peace
and
University.
Right, and one of the things he says is that a person has to change their mentality to be from worker to leaders. And he
yes.
says, and all leaders read.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was going to say is my brother, who is one of the original founders of Kinko's, who lives on a little villa off of a lake in Tennessee now, I've had opportunity to kind of visit with him, and he says the exact same thing, that we all have to change our mentality from workers to leaders, and that leaders read. I mean, and my brother has dyslexia, and not only has dyslexia, but has had huge struggles in school, and his third grade teacher told my mother that he would never amount to be anything.
Wow.
So an educator who has the mentality of the worker be the worker thinks that a young boy like that who's not doing well in school is never going to be anything.
It's kind of like the same as what Einstein's teachers would have thought or Edison's teachers would have thought.
Exactly.
You know, they couldn't do well in school, but the grade had nothing to do with their education. Them conforming to what the other kids could do had nothing to do with the happiness in their life from their education or the contribution that they would make to mankind. I mean, there's a huge different philosophy here. Even, and we can see it a lot with those who choose the professional track and who choose it. Now, this is important to understand. We hope everyone will choose a professional track after they have their broad liberal arts. You know, that the professional track in that sense is what depth phase is.
Right.
There's a big difference between skipping the broad liberal arts and jumping into the specialization professional track.
Because what happens is when you have the broad liberal arts or the education
foundation
for freedom, you absolutely understand that the profession you choose to be in, you are a leader in.
That's
it's
right.
Exactly like what my brother says and what Dave Ramsey said is, You've
got
to get out of the worker mentality, and you've got to get into the leader mentality.
That's right, because then you contribute to the society of man, not just take away.
Right.
It's completely two different tracks. So that's the second level, and there are many, many, many people who fall into that because it's such a huge base philosophy for our public school system.
Well, and plus, too, I think what happens is, it's the rhetoric is based on is a fear based rhetoric.
Yes,
it
is.
If you don't, you will fail. If you don't, you know, you're going to end up a loser in society. It's very fear based, and we know that fear is very effective. I mean, that's how Hitler took over his country.
Yes, that's right.
Fear is very effective. That's how Mao took over his country.
And it's interesting to see what the fear, what happens. I think something that's funny about that is with fear, just waiting. Like, I remember in school we had an incredible teacher, Mr. Westerman. And every year, he'd been teaching for years, and he taught this AP history class. And every year he'd done this experiment with his students. And it worked every single year until I'm saying sometimes there are an exceptional person, okay? My older brother was like this. In a way, he reminds me of Tatiana. This experiment that he did worked every year until he had my brother. And it's the same fear-based simulation. It was a simulation that he did in class, and it was when they were studying about Hitler. And the students didn't know what was happening, but he put them into groups. He picked people who were hidden secret agents who would tell on the other students, and he gave them some power. Okay, so they were really excited. You can imagine, you know, teenagers getting this power to tell on other students. He set up this code that they had to live by even when they were not in class. Like, they had to hail the leader when they saw him. They had to step on the other side of the hall if he was walking down. I mean, he set up this entire system, okay? And he enforced it by, according to how they acted, would determine their grade on this project, which was 50% of their grade.
Whoa.
I mean, it was this big thing because
totally
he wanted
fear-based.
The biggest thing that always happened when he taught about World War II is everybody would say, how could anybody follow Hitler? Why didn't anybody stand up to him? So he did the simulation so they would understand human nature, right? And all he did was implement the same things that Hitler did. And he gave some people power. He made them prejudiced against a certain group of the people, and he took away some of their rights, and, I mean, all this stuff. So after he'd done the secret things and he was introducing something, he was introducing a behavior that they had to follow. Okay? Well, something about my brother is that to him, when something is morally wrong, he can't, at that point in his life, literally, he could not do it. So this behavior that they had to do toward the other kids, my brother couldn't do. And he stood up. My brother's really tall. He stood up in class and he said, "I will not do that." And the teacher just looked at him. I mean, I'm sure he was in shock. He'd been doing this for 10 years. No one had ever stood up. And it was at the right moment where it tipped the scale and 10 other students stood up.
Oh my God.
And said, "I will not do that." And it was an amazing date. There was an assembly. He made them stay in there. He made them miss the assembly. I mean, it just changed the simulation is what happened, because he didn't have the same power to do what he was going to do. And
he had rebels amongst them.
That's right. I mean, when you think about it, there's a certain time when that fear comes out, there's a certain time.
So what you're saying really, I mean, I'm making a connection here, is you're saying that if enough of us stand up to say we will not buy into that lie.
Right, but
anymore,
it has to be it's the timing. Had he waited another day, he wouldn't have those 10 followers and the simulation would have gone ahead and it would have just been that my brother failed. It wouldn't have tipped the entire simulation.
Wow. So, I mean, I'm thinking about the homeschool movement and how huge it's become. It's the time is right now, isn't it?
It is. The time
for
is right.
For us to stand up and say no more.
Yeah.
We're not doing this anymore.
You and I were talking about that on the phone last night, how incredible it is that it's not just a handful of 10 people who are trying to become LIBOR. I mean, if you just, and there's more than just the homeschoolers, some that are, but if you just look at those who are taking a different form of education, and the trajectory, if we just take America, where she's headed and how so many rights are gone and people don't even know it, that the trajectory where that's headed, and yet now the insertion of the large, it's not large in the eyes of the world, but it's hundreds of people,
and
our children.
It's just like we're told. It only takes 3%. Only takes 3% of us. I mean, I'm sure we're not even close to 3%, but it really only takes 3% of us to really stop buying the lie into the lie that education is about getting money.
Yeah. We better move on to number 3. Okay, number 3, it's all about me. This is the self-interested person. You learn because there's something you are generally interested in. You educate yourself in your hobbies. As long as the learning falls under the category where your natural interests and passions lie, then you like it. If it's fun, you'll do it. There can be a lot of scholarship in this level. In a way, Anelody, when you and I met, you were breaking out of that level.
Yeah, that's where I was.
Remember that?
Yeah. That's totally where I was. That level, you know, I really, because in my family, you know, my brother started Kinko's. So, you know,
education was important.
None of us in our family really has bought into the money tree level. We think education is important all the way around. My mother always read. My father always read. We were always continually improving ourselves. So I never really bought into that level, but I truly bought into the third level. If I was interested, I only studied the things I was interested in. And I will tell you right now, it's been an interesting experience. I'm not really a history lover, and I'm teaching the Sword of Freedom this year, and I've had to read Battle Cry of Freedom. And I was just, my husband and I were going to bed last night, and I said to my husband, "Oh my gosh. That is the most fascinating story I have ever heard in my entire life." And he said, "I know, a novelist couldn't write it better, could it?" And I said, "No, I can't believe how fascinating this story is." He says, "I've been trying to tell you for years that you really like this study, the Civil War." I said, "I know, I'm sorry, honey." But you know, it's because I'm coming out of the mentality that I only want to study things that I'm interested in.
Oh yeah, you had, when I met you, you had already said I'm changing that about myself.
Yeah.
I mean, Thomas Jefferson education, you know,
but it takes
totally
a long
put
time,
a hole in
it. It takes a long time, really. It does. I mean, because I'd only ever studied what I was interested in, you know, for all my whole life, it's taken me 5 years to really start opening myself up to studying things that
other
are
levels.
Beyond, yeah.
Yeah,
at the other levels.
Okay, number three. Three is great, and a person learns.
A great place to start, isn't it?
It's a great place to start. It's a great place to just start.
And that's
okay.
Really love of learning, wouldn't you think?
Well, let's keep going, because you'll see. It's love of learning, sort of, for in the young stages, yes. It's love of learning in the young stages. Now, level four.
So that's the level we would really call one, right? In Thomas Jefferson education. First level.
Well, then there's four, too, but
right.
Sort of, yeah. Let's keep going, because we do have some love of learning coming up, too.
Okay.
Number four is branches out. The believer, you learn out of duty.
What did you call it, branches out?
Four, branches out.
Okay.
The believer, you learn out of duty. You feel responsible and or are obedient and will learn out of duty, even if you don't love it, but you might like it. You can go pretty far with this level. You can see the genuine benefit from studying outside of your own interest.
Now, I do have to say that is the level I went to after the next step I left.
That's right. When I met you, you had already bought into the Thomas Jefferson philosophy.
Right.
And
I understood that I needed a scholar phase, and so out of duty,
right.
I started
out of
going
duty.
There. Yeah.
And you hated it.
Uh-huh.
And, yes,
pretty much.
It was painful. Yeah,
what did you say here? Sometimes you like it? What did you say?
Sometimes someone might like
Even
it.
Even if you don't love it, you might like it? No,
yeah.
I didn't.
No,
I
you
didn't. I didn't love it, and I didn't like it.
That's right, but you did it out of duty.
Right.
Yep, and there's discipline involved here.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, our practice scholars will have this type of attitude of, and we talk about it with them, and we say, you have been learning things that you've been interested in most of your life, and now I want to tell you that there are some things that you need to learn, and here's why. And you may not like it, but I hope that you will learn it anyway.
Yeah.
I hope that you will choose to learn this anyway. I hope you will memorize these things anyway. I hope you will write these papers anyway. I hope that you'll read these books anyway.
And
over
on the
time,
depending on the child's personality, you know, some of them are going to say, no, not going to do it. But a majority of the students are going to say, I understand what duty is. I understand that's part of my duty.
I see that this needs to happen. That's right. Okay, then level five, loves to learn. And this is where some breadth comes in. This is the altruist. You learn out of a duty to God and self and country. This is the educable person who has learned the mystery of education. That learning is about changing and becoming. So it's not as low a level of duty. You begin to identify and name your roadblocks and discover unknown strengths and strengthen your weaknesses. It is at this level that you will learn to submit to gaining a breadth of the liberal arts. You are learning to submit to the pain of change because you have felt the joy that it brings. You've had enough of the other level that you now love the change it brings. So you complete this cycle and you crave for more, and you've now learned to associate the joy with the duty.
You know, Tiffany, I really think that you have always been at that level. I mean, I don't think you ever went at any of the other levels. I think you started at that level.
isn't it funny that you don't have to actually start at the other levels, that they're not like that?
Yeah.
That's funny.
That you just understood.
I honestly attribute it I don't know what I attribute it to. Probably to my parents.
I think I have one child who started at that level, too. Yeah. Yeah, the other ones started at different levels, but yeah, I think I had one child. I would say Tatiana started there.
It
and
is,
I think it's interesting because I know you, I think you were born with the sense of, I have a duty to God, myself, and to my country, and I will learn everything there is to learn so that I can be a contributing member.
It's true. I don't remember ever having a different mantra or reason for learning. And I'll tell you what, though, that's a pretty painful place to be in our society.
It is.
Unless you've got a group of homeschoolers, which I didn't. And that's a pretty different path to take. I remember being, I don't know, 12 or 13 years old, seeing a funny on a wall that all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, that's me. That is me. And all it was, you know, like 300 sheep jumping off a cliff following their leader, and one little sheep turning around the other way through this huge mob of sheep going, excuse me, excuse me,
yeah,
excuse me, excuse me. I remember seeing that going, oh, somebody else feels like me.
How funny
just,
is that?
Just even because of the way that the education was. And our youth today are so lucky, especially the ones that we work with, the people who are on this call today, our teachers, the ones that we're working with, that's these kids.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, it totally
literally.
It reminds me of a comic that I once saw. There's this man dressed in Greek clothing with this little a crown of leaves around his head, and he's sitting there, and he's saying to the kids, let us study the universe and the questions of why we exist and all the things that will bring us great joy and happiness. And the kids are all got their backpacks on their shoulder, and they say, oh, we don't have time, Socrates. We have to take our tests.
Oh, yes. Yes, exactly. Okay, level 6, freedom finally, and depth. This is the dedicated. You love learning. You do it for the growth that it brings. It doesn't matter that it's not hard or is hard. When the right mentor asks you to do something hard, you do it. You're dedicated to giving heed and diligence to the light communicated from heaven to the intellect, and you're used to learning that way. I want to say that again. You are dedicated to giving heed and diligence to the light communicated from heaven to the intellect, and you are used to learning that way. You are in the school of intelligence, the school of unending quest for knowledge. The knowledge that comes to you, you learn from every situation. I was on a conversation last night with a close friend of mine talking about when I knew that it was time for me to leave the classroom. And, you know, spending about 18 years in the classroom and learning from that style, and I remember having this conversation just, you know, me just praying and talking and saying, oh my gosh, I'm not supposed to be here in the classroom anymore, but I love learning so much, and I'm used to learning like this, and I'm going to have to learn from the dishes now. Oh my gosh, and from the diapers, and from just the garden, and just, oh, you know, I'm in huge panic. Like,
yeah.
Can I learn from those things?
Yeah.
You remember, I don't know who it was, I think it was Agassiz. A woman came to him and said, I want to learn. And he said, she goes, all I do is potatoes today. No, it was the woman who was admonished to look at the floor, and she took up the floor piece,
okay,
and she saw the ants.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember the
mm-hmm.
story that she ended up impacting life and writing and learning? And that was it. Is my challenge was to learn from life, not just the classroom. I mean, this is a different kind of learning.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my friend, and she's saying, I don't want to submit if I'm not supposed to go back into the classroom this year. I don't want to learn this other way, you know.
Can I tell you, this level takes so much practice. It takes, for me, I feel like I'm entering into this level now, and it takes so much practice because there are several times where I have discovered that I'm not giving heed to the light and knowledge that's coming to me, that I'm giving more heed to the black and white on paper, you know. I'm so it's so much easier to just get the information from a book than to just pay heed to what I'm getting, that those, what Dr. DeMille calls the, you know, raising the epiphanal rate.
And I don't even mean to infer that this doesn't include the books, because, oh, there's tons and tons of books at this level. Absolutely. But the thing is that it's not, that's not,
right.
There's more. There's
right.
more.
You're
yeah.
still reading.
More.
You're still,
oh,
you
yeah.
know, you're still, in, you know, continue yeah. to get your education. But the real bottom line here is that the epiphanal rate has been increased so much that the epiphanies become far more educating than the words on the page.
That's right. And it's the rate. It's that they come faster and in newer, broader, you know, even more specific ways.
Right.
It's almost like I don't know how to explain it. I remember a time when I was reading something and I wanted to understand it. It was an allegory. I was reading this allegory and it's about this tree and the roots of the tree and they weren't strong and I just didn't get it. And I remember asking myself the question, what are the roots and why do they matter so much? Well, when you do that to the universe, you just better watch out, because my tree, my apple tree, fell over the next day. My yard was flood irrigated, and my beautiful, wonderful, loaded with fruit apple tree fell over. Literally the next day after I asked the question about roots. And I realized that, I learned so much because of the allegory and the symbolism, and there my beautiful tree with the beautiful fruit couldn't give fruit anymore because its roots were shallow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and anyway, it just had so much meaning to me, but this is an incredible level to be at, where the growth that it brings and the thing right here too about the mentor, that you submit to the mentor.
Right.
You don't ask, well, is it hard? You just say, is it right? I mean, it's just, is it right? I'll do it. Is this the right mentor? I'm going to do it then. You know? Okay,
right.
Level 7. Have you invested in your education at this level? This is the ultimate synergy connections level. This is what we call the statesman / creator. You become a creator. You finally hit a place where you are so conditioned, the work doesn't hurt quite the same. It's similar to an athlete running a marathon. that they've conditioned themselves, so when they run, you know, a good athlete when they're running a marathon, or someone who has trained well, when they run the marathon, they're not dead. They're not dead afterward. They can still walk and go to the store. My sister says when she was shocked when she ran the last 2 miles with her friend, and then, you know, kind of ducked out when she went across the line, and later that day they were shopping and doing all these things. She's like, I can't believe it. I thought she'd just be in bed for a week, you know. But it's not like that. It's the problem solver stage. It's the creator stage, and it gives a high. It's no longer about you. It is all about others and doing the
creation.
Work for a higher cause.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is when you really can get it about, this is not about me. This is a level where you totally get it, that there's no way that you could have ever created what's being created. You're just one little peon in the pot of creation, and some great amazing thing is on
happening.
The horizon and happening.
That's
and
right.
You get to be part of it.
That's right. And you're able to connect the fields of science to music, of pedagogy to biology. You actually, it's, all truth is subscribed as one great whole, and you get to see the connections in there, parts of them. It's the second wind. It's when breakthroughs occur. It is when the world sits up and listens. I love, my favorite books to read are the books when this is happening. Like when I read biographies unlike the scientists, when Lister read about cobalt in a science magazine and decided that somehow that was tied to the high rate of infection at the hospitals. You know, he tied it in and he was able to change the infection rate because I love to read stories about people who are at this level.
Yeah.
So
that I think is really interesting. I don't know if you've spent a lot of time studying some of those scientists. I'm sure you have. But my dad and I, when he was alive, we had this discussion about Lister. You brought that up. And my dad had spent his entire life studying the scientists. That's what he was, is a scientist. And
yes.
There were some scientists he had a lot of respect for and sometimes some that he didn't have any respect for at all. And though he really liked Lister, and I'll tell you why he liked Lister, because Lister was really unassuming, and he was just solving problems, and he was rejected by 90% of the medical world. They would not believe in his discovery that all you had to do. Well, he was the one who put his instruments into cobalt and disinfected them, and he never got any praise or any recognition for that huge discovery. He had he did this experiment where he would only allow his patients to be in the hospital ward. That they had to all wash their hands and wear masks and use the cobalt, and his patients got infection so much less. And yet,
Lister
nobody
wanted to listen.
Yeah, they didn't
yeah.
want to listen to him. Lister just went on, kept doing his thing, and he realized, eventually someday they're gonna see the work and they're gonna agree, and then, he just wasn't something.
Scientist.
He was a true scientist.
That's right. That's that level. That's right. Wow. Okay, are you there?
That's a true statesman.
It is a true statesman. It is. So the question is, what level are you at on that? Let's go to the second category.
So you need to rate yourself on what level you're at, because you want to get to the next level. So you need to know where you're starting. That's a great test. Tell us where we are.
Now here's some questions. This category is deceiving because all of these actually are under this category. All of these questions are. But I'm gonna call this category the family category, and I have a couple of questions. Here's part one of the next category. Do you hold family council meetings? This is just this part. Do you ever hold family council meetings? This one, Melody, I don't know if your family held this. I remember one in particular family council meeting that we had when I was 16 years old, and my mom and dad sat all of us down. There's eight kids. They sat us all down, and they said, "We're moving, and we need to know if that's okay with you. We're going to move from Salt Lake down to St. George." I mean, it wasn't just a move across town. It wasn't in the Salt Lake Valley. I mean, it was like, okay, we're never going to see our friends again type moving. And they sat us all down, and they said, how do you guys feel about this? We're having a family council meeting. We're talking together and problem-solving together. And they went around the room and asked each of us how we felt about it. And I remember the reactions of my brothers and sisters. I remember especially my sister Cammie's reaction. And it was, "No way! I just made the basketball team! And you can't take me away from..." And she named her friends. And she said, "No way, I'm not moving." And she was really upset. And it turned, that they got to me and they said, what do you want to do? And I said, "Look, if it's right, I'm there." And I said that, and they went to the next person went around, And then mom could, we'd been fighting, all of us. It totally got out of control. Cammy and I were arguing. Everybody was arguing. And mom said, okay, everybody stop. And she said, everybody stand up and scoot over one seat and sit back down. And we all did this. And then she says, okay, you've become that person. Now, do you want to move? I just went around the room, and for some reason, Cammy and I just traded places. We hadn't just scooted over. We had just swapped places. Everybody in the room had swapped with somebody. And we'd swapped places, and she got to me, and I was Cammy, and she said, do you want to move? I mean, everybody had been talking and arguing, and nobody had been listening to each other, but all of a sudden, I had to be Cammy. She said, do you want to move? And I said, no, I just worked really hard, and I finally made the basketball team, and my friends are on it, and we just barely moved 2 years ago, and I want to move again. And I was feeling what she was feeling, and I was hurting inside. It was horrible, Anelody.
That was amazing.
It was horrible. It was so horrible. It was awful. I remember the feelings of how hard it felt horrible. I didn't want to move.
You know, Tiffany, I need to tell you something. I think it's very interesting watching your family as you have, all of you are getting older, and now the baby of the family is married. You know, you're all out on your own now. You come from a very large family. There are 8 of you, and I come from a very large family. There are 11 of us. And I sit there and marvel all the time at what great friends you are in your family, and how I compare it to the difficult times that we have in our family, because we aren't as good as friends as you are, and we're not as close as you are. And it seems to me that your family, even though, you know, sometimes being close can be too close, but it seems to me that your siblings have pretty good boundaries, and they understand how far too close is, and how, you know, you work together as a family even now,
yeah.
which is surprising to me. And I've asked this question over and over and over and over and over again. Why isn't my family of 11? Because we, you know, you think that large families, you know, they have all the same characteristics, but they don't. Why is it that my family of 11 doesn't have the same kind of relationships that your family of 8 has? And I've analyzed this, and I really believe, Tiffany, that the only difference between your family and my family is that your parents held family council and mine didn't. Because you had a chance, that gave you the chance. You had a chance to sit in Cammy's seat and see how she felt. I never was given that opportunity to be with my parents, and my parents say, could you just for 1 second sit in Cammy's seat? Oh. They never had that opportunity to coach me through my feelings about that.
Well, and sometimes we'd have family councils on, you know, there could be a real problem, and we'd sit down together and as a family, come up with solutions.
Yeah,
and it taught us autonomy.
Right, and you were in
right.
on the problem solving together. And yet, I know your parents very well. I know that they're very strong leaders. I know that you could look to. I know that I'm part of this problem solving, but I also know that I have a leader who's leading forward, and he's going to help. They're going to help me get to the next step of my life.
Yeah. Well, and that's the second part of this question is, as husband and wife in your homes, unless you're a single parent, or maybe we have people on the call who don't have children yet, but as husband and wife, do you hold executive council meetings between husband and wife? And
it's interesting, Tiffany, because I think executive council meeting makes some men feel very uncomfortable. Because then they're going to have to sit down with their wife face to face and really talk about the real issues in their family.
You know,
and their
it is really funny that you say it makes the men uncomfortable. I don't know any family that the woman isn't begging for it.
Right.
Honestly. And how many beg and beg for it for years before the husband all of a sudden realized, oh my gosh, the things I want in life actually happen if I hold executive council meetings.
We actually have, our money gets in line and our children are, they're,
you know, the things I want to happen with the children, the meals I want to eat, whatever
exactly.
It is,
and my
you know?
My laundry gets done the way I want it, and my ironing gets done the way I,
exactly. It's such a beautiful form for communication, and I love it. I tell you that I feel so cherished when my husband says to me on a weekly basis, Tiffany, how you doing? How you coming on your goals? What are your needs? You know,
aww.
And then I say to him, honey, how are you doing? What are your needs? And then I love it when he goes to the next level and he says, Tiffany, tell me about all the kids. And I can say, oh my gosh, Melanie, oh, I need your help with her so bad.
Yeah.
I just, I don't know what to do. And he says, well, maybe we ought to try this.
Uh-huh.
And he totally has the answer. You know?
Yeah, it's family it's the council, the executive council meeting where we actually solve the real problems of our life. I'll tell you, one time I was having a huge struggle trying to help my son who when he was younger, he's just so willful. There was just no way school was just impossible for me with him, and I can remember times I would be calling my husband on the phone in the middle of the day, okay, if you don't come home right now, you will have a homicide on your hands. I'm not doing this anymore, you know. And, I can't even tell you the executive council meetings that we had, how many we had to address this issue. Finally, two, 3 years probably. Finally, my husband said to me, honey, why don't you just give in and speak his language for him? What are you talking about? Don't you understand that he's a carrot child? If you put a carrot out for him, he will go for the carrot. Just keep trying to find carrots, and it will help him train him.
Wow.
And I said, I don't believe in carrots. And he said, it's okay, honey. It's okay if you don't believe in carrots.
Because he does. Wow.
And
wow.
Finally, after 3 years, I stopped whining and groaning because we in family in executive council meeting we kept just coming up with carrots. Okay, what's a new carrot?
Right.
And we finally started having success with him.
Wow. Well, I feel if if we go 1 week without it, it's okay. But by the time we go 2 or 3 weeks without our exec council meeting, I feel like a chicken with its head cut off.
That you're not accomplished.
I'm just running around, aimless, not knowing how to help my husband reach his goals. He doesn't know how to help me. We're mm-hmm. crossing paths. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know what the kids need, and he doesn't know.
Total disconnect.
Yeah, total disconnect. He doesn't know that so-and-so is about to have an emotional breakdown, and if he gives them too big of a job, oh my gosh, they're going to fall apart because I have to communicate. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, those are two of the major questions about how liber are you is your family councils and your exec council meetings.
How well are you stimulating liber in your home?
Yeah. Do you want to ask the other two, or do you want to go on to the next?
Go ahead. Let's ask the next one.
Okay. The next category, this is a really fun category. This is, it's almost not fair. This one's called stewardship. Are you a good steward? Are you a good steward? And there are many things to be a good steward over. Are you a good steward over your time? Are you a good steward over the physical objects in your home? Are you a good steward over your talents and abilities? Are you a good steward over your money? This is about stewardship. Are you a good steward? I mean, we've all heard the biblical parable about the talents and the man. I don't know if it's the king or who it was, but he gave his servants talents, and depending on what they did with it, one man increased it, the other man used them. One of the men took his and buried it in the ground. And when the king came back, and the man who had five and who increased them, he gave him the one, the man who buried his in the ground. He says, I was afraid that, you know, something would happen to it. I just buried it. Well, the king was very unhappy with that servant. He took that talent, he gave it to the one that had many. It's really funny. My husband and I have been talking. We're like, if you ever want to get something done, go to the busiest person, you know, who gets a lot of things done. They get a lot more responsibilities. They know how to use their time. So this is about stewardship. Are you a good steward? Are you a good steward over your body? Are you a good steward over... I mean, there's so many categories here. This really puts everything into its proper perspective. And sometimes people can just really change the focus into being a steward over one aspect of their life and lose everything else. That's not what it is.
Can I share a story here?
Yes.
My husband and I were really asking ourselves this question, especially in the way of finances. My husband is a banker. He has an MBA. He has a degree in international finance. You know, money was his thing. He, you know, economics, and, you know, he was valedictorian, and economics was his subject, you know. And
yeah.
So he felt like he was very well educated in this area, and yet our personal finance never really seemed to...
They didn't bring you peace.
Yeah, it didn't bring us peace. We were in debt. We didn't know how to get along as far as money. You know, he figured, I'm right about money, so you just do what I tell you to do. And I didn't agree with that. And we were feeling so floundered. You know, we just were not doing well. And we kept saying to each other, we just are not being good stewards over this, and we don't know how to get any better. And I can remember a time about 4 or 5 years ago, we were praying, and I just pled to the Lord, please help us with our money. We're not doing this right. And we looked into financial counseling and debt consolidation, and, you know, we looked into all kinds of stuff to help get, you know, my husband had just gone through school. We had $17,000 in student loans and, you know, things like that. And so we had an opportunity to be introduced to a program, and my husband looked into it and started to get really excited about it, and we decided to take the classes. It was really cheap. It was only like $120 for 13 weeks of classes. And what we realized it helped us do, it wasn't someone who came in and just took over our money for us and took it away from us. It was someone who came in and helped us become good stewards over our money. And, you know, we spent 13 weeks learning how to get along, that relationships, money is about relationships, and my husband was never taught that in his school. In fact, my husband doesn't really like relationships that much. So relationships with money was a whole new concept for him. But when he realized that money was about relationships, all of a sudden something changed in our lives. We were able to pay off all of our debt. We have money in the bank. We have savings now that we've never had before. We have investments we've never had before. And all in 5 years, because we asked ourselves the question, are we a good steward over our finances? And we discovered we were not. And
wow.
We had to learn how to become good stewards. You know, the question, am I a good steward over my body? Am I a good steward over my family? We have to realize that there are answers out there for us in all of those questions.
Yeah. Yeah. And the point is to start it's a stewardship mentality is what it is.
Right.
And it is part of being LIBOR. The stewardship mentality is. Thank you for sharing that. And it's been incredible to watch the difference that Financial Peace University has made in you and in even our life. And I, that is a great mentor for the financial stewardship. Okay, next question. Let's move on. Number four is about the vocabulary for freedom. You know, last week we kind of talked about the importance of vocabulary. So these things, these words, we picked some that are very important that could take years and years before we truly have the meanings of them. We just want to list some, and through the year, watch your understanding of these. We just have 10. We just have 10 vocabulary words. We're going to list them and hope that over the year, all of our understandings for in these, you know, 10 areas grows. Okay?
The first one is the word sovereignty. I introduced that a little bit last week. But let me just give you my experience with the word sovereignty. I first started hearing the word on a regular basis when I started homeschooling, because of course people are very interested in their sovereignty who homeschool. I'd never really even heard the word before that. Now I'm sure Tiffany had, but I looked up the word and wanted to know, you know, more about it, and I had some people who called themselves sovereign citizens, you know, and kind of looked into that. But it wasn't until I really started studying John Locke last year that I started to comprehend the word sovereignty. Let me give you a definition. Sovereignty connotates power. And the history of thought behind power. What is organic power or natural power, and what is man-made power, the difference between the two.
Now, these are just some introductory thoughts as the year progresses and as our education progresses this year. Like every single one of these, we could spend an entire week on. That's the point.
Right.
So...
I'm just going to give the definition one more time.
Okay,
connotates power, the history of thought behind power, and what's the difference between organic power and man-made power.
Okay, good. Number two, worldviews. Can you list at least 6 worldviews and be able to carry on a fluent conversation in any one of those worldviews?
Should we test ourselves, Tiffany? Can we list 6?
I'm not testing myself.
Okay, I'll test myself.
Thank
you. If I can,
yourself.
Okay. All right.
I'll hold a conversation with you in the
Okay. Biblical Christianity.
Good.
Okay. Secular humanism.
Good.
Cosmic humanism.
Good.
Postmodernism, which is all existentialism. I think you can make the connection between the two, that they're both the same.
Do you put all existentialism in postmodernism?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
But we could have a discussion on that if you want. You could list it somewhere else, but I
you
think
keep
that...
Going. No, I do. I just break postmodernism into 2 groups, but keep going.
Okay. What do you break it into?
Well, keep going.
Okay.
Keep going.
Okay, Islam.
Good.
And I would say the Chinese worldview would be Taoism or Buddhism.
Okay, good. So this can give our teachers an idea of what we're talking about here with the worldviews. And I love TGYC Level 3. I love it because that's where we pick, in TGYC Level 3, we pick 3, we cover several worldviews and learn the base philosophy and their view on several things, but then we actually pick three and begin to read books in those areas and to where it initiates the education in the worldviews for our youth.
Well, the reason why we choose the three is because they're the three most prominent in the Western world.
Yes, and I've allowed my teachers to have the students pick what three they actually want to read books in. Like, if they want to choose Wild Swans, they're going to get a different worldview than if they picked, all of the works of Shakespeare.
Right.
You know, or something, but they at least begin to go deeper into three, and that's, you know, part. I love TGYC 3 for that. Okay, question number three is forms. The vocabulary is forms. Can you list the categories of forms, the element of a form? We're not going to go into these right now. We do have a whole conference call later in the year on forms.
Yes, and be waiting for that, looking for that. I think it's our last call. We'll be going way really depth on forms. But
right.
Forms, and if you don't understand what a form is, you can just say it's a system. Form is a much better word for it. But if you can start looking in your life, discovering the patterns that develop the forms,
yeah,
or underlying in the forms.
Okay, number five is human nature, the nature of man. Just what is it that you know about human nature? What, take note of everything that you learned about human nature. For instance, you know, I mentioned the simulation that Mr. Westerman held in the history class, that it was human nature for people to put off, like if they were uncomfortable, they didn't want to stand out in a crowd, it was hard to know when to say, no, you've gone too far. They want to protect themselves, and, you know, it's human nature. All Hitler did was tap into human nature and use fear.
Right.
It takes education to rise above the nature of man.
There's the most interesting thing that just happened recently with one of my friends. She's been leading in this organization that we have here, and she had another one of her friends call her and complain about something that was going on in the organization. And immediately my friend decided that she needed to make a change, because, you know, if someone's complaining, then we've got to change something. And so she sent out an email saying, okay, I'm going to change this. And then I called her back and said, you know, we need to really consider this. And I kind of went over all the points of what we needed to consider. And I said, you know, I don't think we need a change. I think we just need to remember that the complainers seem very loud, and it's human nature for us to respond to a complainer, even if it's the minority. And we have to be very careful to respect the voice of the majority that aren't complaining.
And sometimes when people complain, they're complaining about the system and not the root problem.
Right.
The person, the leader, has to hear what the real root problem is. Sometimes
yeah.
it's the complainer isn't educated. In that topic, there's like 1,000 things.
Right.
But it's the responsibility of the leader to find what's the root.
Right. But it's human nature.
Yeah, it is.
Know
it is human nature.
If they complain, they will be heard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true, and we can look at our law, how our law and adjudicated. Our judging system, you know, fits and where human nature falls and how it impacts that. I mean, the whole thing.
Right.
Okay, number five, natural law. Two fields of natural law, the laws that govern nature and the laws that govern man. Number six, vocabulary.
Oh, well, that was a bomb to drop. Should we just go to that
yep.
and leave it? Natural
yeah.
law.
Yeah, natural law.
She just said that bomb and leave.
Leave it. Number six, inalienable. What are your God-given rights, and what are the rights that need to be suspended for? Do you have anything to say on inalienable? What is inalienable? Okay, no, seven, suffrage. Number
eight. I don't even have a definition for suffrage, because I think that it's every person's duty to know that word, and so we're not even going to give you the definition of suffrage.
Okay. Number eight, labor, and we begin to go into that. I mean, just good, you know, this whole call is on labor. Number nine, rhetoric. We've got three that go with this, you know, comparing rhetoric, spin, and propaganda.
What's the difference between the three, rhetoric, spin, and propaganda? I think it's very interesting that some people think that rhetoric is simply propaganda. It may be,
propaganda uses rhetoric.
Yes, propaganda uses rhetoric.
Yes.
They're not the same thing.
No. And then go ahead.
So it's really important for us to understand the difference between rhetoric, spin, and propaganda, so that we know that when we're given information and it has a spin to it, it's probably twisted a little toward somebody's worldview or towards somebody else's opinion, and we're getting a spin on it, so we're not really getting the full information. Dr. DeMille does a wonderful presentation on media.
The media
in the modern day, and they talk about spin, and they spend a lot of time explaining that all of our immediate media that we have at our hands, it usually has a spin to it. But if we'll go into the periodicals, National Review is one of them. I don't know all of them.
Read the news.
And actually read the periodicals and read the event instead of the spin that's given to the event in the news, then we'll understand what's going on.
Yes.
And we can formulate an opinion on the truth instead of on a spin.
Good. And then the tenth is the vocabulary of the great debate.
What is the great debate? And are you engaged in the great debate?
That's right. Okay, we have time to open it up for questions for a few minutes, for like about 10 minutes. Does that sound good, Anality?
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay, how we're going to do it. If you have a question, then press 6. It will unmute you. Say your name and
ask
your question. Yeah.
Sometimes we have a hard time with this. Some people can't unmute. This is Dina. Hi, Dina.
Hi.
What the heck? Dina Ortiz?
Yes.
Hi.
Great lecture. After natural law, what was, I kind of lost in the conversation, what was number 6, rights? Or, because you said inalienable rights. Pardon me?
Inalienable.
It's just a word.
Okay, the word inalienable. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Carol Jensen.
Hi, Carol.
Hello, Carol.
Hi. Number 6 on the levels of labor, I just didn't catch what you called it.
The dedicated. It's
pardon?
Freedom finally.
Okay.
Freedom finally. It's depth, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And the and the characteristic is the dedicated.
Actually, Tiffany, can you say that? This is Dina again. On number 6, you did your statement twice about that. Would you mind doing it one more time about dedicated?
You love learning. You do it for the growth that it brings. It doesn't mean that it's not hard, but you do what's right. Like when the mentor asks you to do something, you don't say, is it hard? Say, is it right? You are dedicated to giving heed and diligence to the light communicated from heaven to the intellect. Probably the sentence you were looking for.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like you are in the school of intelligence, not just the school of books, not just the school of whatever. It's the school of intelligence, the school of the unending quest for knowledge and understanding.
Tiffany, this is Nicolene. I have a comment.
Hi. Go ahead.
So we were going over these levels, and the thing that kept coming to me, the levels of library, the thing that kept coming to me was that I know so many people who are probably in level three, where it's all about them, and they all of a sudden they look and they go, oh, you know what? I want to be in freedom. And so they just think they can jump there.
Right.
And
you
they
know what,
cannot jump there.
Nicolene, I have a comment to make about that because it's something I've really come across too. I think you and I are in the same boat here.
Yeah.
I will tell you why. And it's because in the 1950s, our society began to move toward more of an existentialist worldview. And because we started moving into the existentialist worldview, it became all about us. And so it became education became a fight between what I wanted to do and what you want me to do.
Absolutely.
Because I want to be free to do what I want to do. And so because we have this existentialist background in all of our community, we don't understand the difference between, oh, I'm so free, I'm free to do what I want to do, and I'm free to choose right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if I choose right, I will be able to have the consequences of that, and if I choose wrong, I will have to take the consequences of that.
Totally.
Thomas Jefferson education is about freedom to do what is right or wrong, not freedom to do whatever you darn well please.
Right, well, and it's very important for people to know, like I was tracking through my own education, and I remember specifically when I all of a sudden thought, okay, I'm supposed to be writing more. So every time I read my core books, I'm going to take notes. Every time, even though I don't want to. That was the duty. That was the branching
right.
out. Okay,
right.
I have to do this. I'm going to do this. And then when I switched to the other, when all of a sudden it was, oh, wow, do I ever love this court, this God, this country, this, wow, and
yeah.
I love it. And then you move on. But the thing is that you can't just skip, I don't think, those other levels. You have to some degree let yourself experience that duty so that it leads to that love, so that it leads to that freedom. And I just wanted to throw that out there because I thought, you know, there's so many people who could hear this and who could think, oh, I want freedom. I'm just going to go do that one.
Right.
Right. You have to move through it because you actually, to get to level seven, there's a certain amount of education you have to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I think what you're saying is it's a process, Nicolene.
Yes, it is.
It's processing through it. Yeah.
Wow.
I would agree with you there for sure. And I have to admit that, like I said, I really honestly don't think Tiffany was ever at any other level but at level five. I think she started there. I think she was born with that sense of duty.
But if you're not. I started at a three too.
Yeah.
I think it, you know, and
yeah.
But it's
and
the top three. You have to move through those.
Yeah.
You can't skip. Yeah.
I was just going to say the other thought that occurred to me as I was going through was that it's really, really important how you were talking about the schools teach. Okay, you need to do this for the job, but when we're doing things in our home, I make a special effort to give my children vision in those later stages and in showing them what I had to do in my duty stage or things like that, because you do kind of start them out in level three in a way when they're little.
Right.
You have to give them that vision all the time and not just live in the level, but make sure that you can those other levels.
In a Thomas Jefferson education, you don't have to do level one and level two. In fact, you don't want to do level one and level two. Start at level three.
Well, the funny thing is, Anality, in analyzing how it works, even though I learned because I loved it and out of the duty, and I knew that I was learning for a higher purpose than even just me, that doesn't mean that human nature didn't make it about me for quite a while.
Yes.
Too. I mean, I remember the process when I realized that there was more than just because of what I was going to become, that it was actually about others.
Yeah.
And also the battle, I remember the battle that I faced constantly.
Please note that your conference will expire in 5 minutes.
School robbed me of my time. That's what it robbed me of. I remember having the conversation with my dad in our private interview saying, Dad, I wish I had a photographic memory because I have to memorize all these things for the test. It takes so much time. I spend 7 hours at school and about 4 more hours on homework. And 2 hours of my homework is just memorizing stuff from my next test that I forget later. And if I had a photographic memory, then I could just read all day. And I could really get an education, you know. I mean, because school really robbed me of my time because I did buy into getting good grades.
Yeah.
You know, it was not, I was like I was on two horses. I wanted an education for the real reason, and I also thought I had to have good grades.
Right.
And it can't ride two horses very long.
Yeah. What is someone was saying something.
Oh, it was just Nicolene again. I said, I did the same thing. That's why I fluffed so much school.
How hilarious is that?
Yeah.
All right. Anyone else with any other questions?
This is Mary Taylor. I was wondering what you mentioned about the periodicals. And I'm just wondering what some of those are.
Okay.
And then also if you could quickly tell us where we can look up more things about worldviews.
Okay, there's a book called Understanding the Times. If you haven't read that, it's a must read. It's on the five pillar list.
Right.
And that's a good place to start with worldviews. And there's it's a research book, so there's a ton of references in that book you can go to.
Okay.
And the other one is, you know, I'm so bad at this, periodicals. The only one I read is National Review, so I don't know all of them.
And where could I get that? Or
you can order it online, and it's a monthly periodical, comes to your home. It's about $50 a month. And my husband reads...
A year, sorry.
My husband reads U.S. News and World Report. That's another one on that list. Let's see, what does my daughter read? We try to read three different ones so that we can share our information.
I like to read Foreign Affairs.
Oh, Foreign Affairs. That's the one she reads, is Foreign Affairs.